listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician
Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. And this is a special Apple Music Roundtable Edition. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is the one and only Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
I'm great. I'm excited about this news.
The big news being that you of the week that everyone's talking about, you made it to 100% of your Pledge Music campaign.
Yeah, that was the high point of the music industry, actually. Yeah. I was talking about Apple, but if you want to go there, I would love to.
Yeah, let's talk about how you feeling now.
I'm very relieved and
you're not rejected, happy. You're accepted.
Right. No, I'm happy. I had 24 days left in my funding period when I got to 100%. And so, yeah, Pledge Music, when you get to 100%, they send you sort of a chunk of the money. So now I have what I need to get the record mastered and pay the people who are doing my artwork. And I'm excited about it. So all those sort of gears are starting to go, too. But I should say, if you're still interested in pre-ordering the album, go to pledgemusic.com/Chris Robley.
Yeah, and I got the T-shirt package. You better not be putting something offensive on that T-shirt, Chris. There was no approved design when I made the purchase, so.
Nope, I'm going to actually make one just for you.
Oh, it's just for me.
That'll be completely offensive.
Oh, okay.
I just have to spend some time thinking about what would be most offensive to you.
So. Okay, yeah, I don't know. Without crossing any, you know, lines that are just too far, I'd like to see what you could come up with.
Yeah, I'll send you that, privately. But.
So, I had an interesting experience this week with how weird the internet is and how weird and random things can happen with your music that you never even expected. I think we talked on the podcast. I can't remember if we did an episode. I know you and I talked about it, but. Back in, I think it was in February or something, I saw this random Twitter bot. It looked like a random Twitter bot, post something about Small Town Poets and our t-shirt. And I was like, huh, what? And I clicked through and it turns out, one of the main characters in this scene was wearing one of our t-shirts right there on camera for about 2 minutes straight, where you can just, it was a t-shirt we had that was yellow with the name in blue. And it was like a giant billboard for our band for two whole minutes on this show with one of the main characters was wearing. So it was really odd that popped up and that with some Twitter bot forwarded. But another random thing like that happened this past week. I'm, you know, at work and I monitor a bunch of Twitter feeds at work just to see what people are talking about. And all of a sudden,
there's ESPN's Twitter feed.
ESPN, you know, gear threads and all that kind of stuff. But no, stuff for work, Chris. I would never do anything unwork related at work. But suddenly, a bunch of people were talking about Small Town Poets. I'm like, what's going on? Why is that? And somebody had posted the track list of a compilation album we were on in 1999 called Wow 99. It was like all the, you know, the big hits in Christian music from 1999. It's the one album I have a platinum record for. And suddenly all these people were talking about it and talking about us. And I go to the website and it literally all it is someone listing the tracks that were on that album. And then when they had an official music video to go with that song, they put it in. It had 100 comments on it, and it had only been live for like a few hours. And I'm like, the internet's so weird. People post track lists from an album from 1999, and everyone's weighing in on it and talking about their favorite bands, and it's just the random stuff that kind of gets you attention for your music. Which
clearly, that compilation was important to a lot of people who want to wax nostalgic or get excited about it again.
Well, I have a theory about some of the reasons why we're starting to pop up in places like that TV show and like this again. I have this theory about music listening and people's that there's like this 20-year curve that from, you know, because last decade the 80s music was very popular and now 90s music's popular, and it's all the people that loved music when they're in high school and college, had families and got distracted with life, and now they have time to re-engage with music again. And so they're kind of interacting with the stuff that kind of was the soundtrack to their childhood or their upbringing. That's kind of my theory.
That makes sense. And if they're in a position like of, I don't know if this sounds lame, but some sort of position of power now that they're older, but, you know, like I'm thinking for that TV show, like maybe the person who was in charge of costumes or something was a fan of yours in high school. And now that she's in charge of designing the costumes for this show, she's like, oh, I'm going to put my favorite bands,
which is
from
what
high school's shirt on the lead character or whatever.
Which I think is what happened, because I tagged the actress in the post and she liked it and commented on it, saying that it was somebody who was that they. I said, did you guys get a good deal on it, or was somebody a fan? And she said both, because I'm like, it was pristine, too. It was, like, in perfect condition. But anyway.
When you first told me that, you were like, a shirt from ours from, like, the late 90s was on this TV show. I was like, that is gross. Like, how many hands did that shirt go through? And, like, did it have, like, you know, like, crusty pit stains? And
no, it looked pristine, and that was our top seller, and I don't know what none of us have any of it anymore. That was also why I'm like, man, I wish I could get one of those. Anyway, it was just this week that experience of someone posting a track listing plays into an interview that I've already recorded that will be forthcoming from an artist named Josh Collum that deals with YouTube and similar situation with crazy amount of people weighing in off of a track listing from a compilation album. So that's a little sneak peek into an upcoming interview. But Chris, we've got big news to get to.
I just was describing this news to my mom, and I said, it's big, 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 big news.
And so we don't have a news section for this roundtable. It's a special roundtable. We figured we needed to cover Apple Music and the announcement and all the things around it. And it's big news. So the short of it is, this week, Apple announced its new streaming service. It's going to be called Apple Music. And before we get into the details, I think the thing that was most interesting to me is to see how crazy Spotify went this week. They're just saying all sorts of crazy stuff over there.
I think the individual indie artist is making like millions of dollars from Spotify.
Yeah,
right?
According to Spotify, we all have checks for $700,000 coming that we didn't know we made. Yeah, they posted an article bragging about how they made it to 20 million subscribers and how artists are making so much money. This is not an exaggeration. I have the article here because, and I will try to put it in a link to it in the show notes. They posted four categories of artists and the earnings that they made. Now, granted, I'm sure there might have been some people in these various categories that made this amount of money, but the post and the graphic from Spotify, it's on their website, says, typical 1 year payout per artist. So the keywords,
you think it's an average,
the keywords typical and per artist. So you can say, well, maybe this artist did that, but that's not what this says. This says typical per artist, and it's from Spotify. So the global superstar, as they call it, made $7.7 million last year, and this coming year should make, let's see, the graphic's really small, $13.9 million. The Spotify Top 100 artist made $1.9 million and should make $3.3 million in the coming year. The Heritage artist, which I'm not exactly sure what that means. I'm just assuming that means like somebody that's not really performing anymore but had a decent size catalog or whatever. This year made $1.4 million. Next year, 2.6. Now, here is the intriguing one. The niche slash indie artist, and we can argue all about what that means, but it still says typical per artist niche indie. This year, $700,000. Next year, $1.2 million.
Go indie artists. You're making a living from Spotify.
You know, this is questionable at best.
When you, well, I just interrupt for a second. When you shared that, I think it was on Facebook, I said, what the hell is that? And I clicked on the graphic. And then I was expecting it to be on one of those sites that's like, you know, like The Onion or some fake news site.
Yeah, it's from Spotify directly. Now, here's what's so funny about it. Their one success story, indie success story that they've talked about over and over again, and if you look online, it's not that hard to find. I think he specifically put a dollar amount that he's made $300,000 lifetime from Spotify. And I know, I forget the artist's name, his story is like, He became popular overseas in places where there's sort of been the skip from physical to streaming because of technology reasons where, you know, like economies that weren't as good. And so a lot of people weren't buying downloads, but now the mobile devices are wired with streaming services that has caught on and boosted his career. And so that's a story you could probably search that and find, you know, Spotify success story and find it, because I know Spotify likes to talk about it all the time. Again, that number, I believe, is 300,000 that was attached to that, maybe even less. And we have artists that we know that, like Zoe Keating posts all the time, who's a big indie artist that talks about it, and she's posting what she makes all the time, and it's like maybe $10,000 or something. So there's something problematic here. Anyway, all that to say, Spotify is really trying to get some goodwill as Apple Music launches. And
so apparently you can just invent numbers or tweak numbers and come up with a fancy graph. And
so if you were on the bubble about buying that new car, that new guitar, buying that new house, go ahead and do it. You got a check for $700,000 coming from Spotify. And it's going to be $1.2 next year because we're niche indie artists. So anyway, that was funny.
The other funny thing about Spotify, though, while we're on the topic, when Apple made this announcement that we'll be talking about later in the episode, Daniel Ek, the founder of Spotify, tweeted, "Oh, okay," or something like that. It was very unimpressed and dismissive.
Yeah, and it got deleted. His tweet got deleted. Yeah, so you know the pressure's on over there, and they just borrowed another $500 million. So I had posted something about Spotify versus Apple Music being the new Cola Wars of the Cola Wars of a new generation. And I think I know what company is going to win the Pepsi challenge this time, seeing that one company is borrowing money like crazy. The other one could buy half the planet, and that would be an Apple. So let's talk about Apple Music. Chris, what is Apple Music? You've been writing a lot of content about Apple Music this week.
I think I've written 9 articles this week already about it. So I'll tell you what they will tell you it is, but first I'll tell you what I think it is. It's a streaming service with the big Apple logo on it. It's basically like Spotify. I guess the thing that I think is so important and is so going to maybe revolutionize the music industry in some way is that it's just another streaming service. I think that boring fact is what's really important. Besides that, though, when Apple launched it, they kind of muddled up the branding a little bit, I thought, in the announcement, and they downplayed the fact that it was a streaming service to an extent and focused a little bit more on Beats One, which is a radio station that's curated by 3 kind of popular DJs. It's 24/7 radio. It's available worldwide. And it's available to subscribers to Apple Music. And then they have, you know, iTunes Radio, and they're going to be making a lot more of like curated playlists and stuff like that. So there's that like human touch for music recommendation. And then the third aspect that they kind of played up a lot was that through Apple Connect, artists can get a hold of, basically get access to their artist profiles on Apple Music and customize their bio and add pictures and even upload videos and tracks themselves, which are not monetized. So, you know, it'd be good for probably like uploading demos to preview things or anyways, that kind of stuff. So those are the three aspects: a streaming service, a radio and music recommendation service that's kind of powered by humans, and then that bridge between fans and artists on Apple Music, which they're calling Connect, which is a little bit reminiscent of Ping from years and years ago, which was their like failed social media thing. But yeah, anyways, that's Apple Music at a glance.
Yeah, if you go to their website, they have quite a bit of information. Actually, to Apple's credit, I will say that they have far more information than they typically do on these kind of things. And when they've done like major upgrades to the iTunes service or whatever in the past, they haven't really put out a lot of information in advance. But they have this time. So yeah, they have like their three bullet points: music, radio, and at Connect or Apple Connect. Apple Connect is what it is. They use an at sign. But and I would agree with you that when they did the big keynote, they really didn't. The branding was of the streaming service, not the branding, I should say, but the defining the streaming service. That portion of it was really played down quite a bit, and they really put a lot of focus on the radio portion and the artist portion. Now, I have a feeling they probably did that because, one, they're trying to give people a reason to be interested in this other than it being another streaming service. And so the streaming service part of it is probably, you know, people have an understanding of what that might be at this point. But I have a feeling they're trying to highlight the other aspects of it. And their tagline that they're using is "All the ways you love music, all in one place." So that's how they're going out talking about it. So the radio specifically, that Beats One thing, I honestly was having a hard time following because they called out three different people that are like DJs, and they kept saying live 24/7. But then they kept saying, "We're already recording shows for this." And I'm like, is it live radio? Or are you just saying that anytime I log in, there will be a feed running? Because that's where it was kind of like some of the words they were using to describe it. I'm like, I don't quite understand what they're trying to say here. Is it like that DJ on the air live? Like if I call in, he could potentially answer? Or is it just that anytime I log on my computer, there'll be a stream?
I mean, at first I assumed it meant it was live, and then, you know, after a day or so, I was like, yeah, probably they're just pre-recording all this stuff, and, you know, I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work, but
yeah, I think
we'll see on June 30th.
I think it's live as in I can turn on NBC tonight and see live television that was recorded 6 months prior. So yeah, that was one thing. I don't know how much traction that will get.
I mean, for me, when they started talking about that, I just thought this is a branding mistake. No one cares about Beats Music anymore. As soon as Apple Music, Apple acquired Beats for like $3 billion or something like that. And then they're essentially rebranding Beats as Apple Music, the streaming service. And I'm thinking, like, why keep this Beats thing alive? Like, well, you could just call it Apple. I don't know, come up with some sort of Apple affiliated term and offer the same exact service with an Apple thing, and you'd have a way more consistent message, way more.
Well, the reason why I think they did, you know, because they still have the headphones, Beats headphones aren't going away, and they're still sort of iconic, although they sound terrible. you could pay $5 for a better pair of headphones, and that's not exaggeration. Story for another time. Anyway, so they still have those. So I think they're trying to still make the connection between that very recognizable brand. But I agree. It was weird that they I don't know, maybe they felt like they just couldn't come up with a better name and let's just call it that. So that is the radio. So let's talk a little bit about the Apple Connect and what that appears to be. You know, I went back and rewatched the keynote when they talked about it, and they don't really show much about what this is really going to look like.
What's actually more helpful on the Apple website is a page that describes it, and they use examples from Pharrell to sort of illustrate what it can do or what it might do. I thought that was way more helpful than what they presented in the keynote.
Yeah, I was actually confused when they had Drake come up. He talked a lot about connecting with his fans and direct-to-fan being so important, and then he left the stage, but they didn't show anything or how he was plan to use the service or what options are available. It was just kind of like, okay.
He essentially talked and then said, so I'm excited to start using this.
Yeah.
Without any demonstration.
So what, like you said, on their website, they have a very exhaustive FAQ actually that says a lot of what you will be able to do and don't do. And again, to Apple's credit, they normally don't give advance notice on and very concrete ideas. So what they're saying actually sounds pretty good. When I was reading through it, I thought, you know, it's very easy to look at what they say it will be able to do and relate it to what we know of other social networks and make some very obvious assumptions. I think this could be great. I think it could be a really useful tool for artists. But so did people think that about Ping when they launched their own social network on the iTunes store that failed miserably so fast. Before we get to, I've got a why it won't be Ping 2.0 and why it could be Ping 2.0. Before we get to that, I'm going to explain briefly what it is you now can go claim your profile. You will be able to. Actually, I should say you now can, because you can start doing it now. You can claim your artist profile at Apple Music. And once you claim that profile, you are able to start using it like a social network. From what they're saying, you'll be able to post videos. You'll be able to post links that leave the service. You'll be able to post all sorts of things. They'll be portable. You'll be able to share outside of the service, which I think is one of the key things that killed Ping, was that you couldn't share anything outside of Ping. But anyway, so there's... It looks like you'll be able to create an interesting profile. And the benefit potentially to artists is that folks will be engaged with you right where they can buy the music, which is always a good thing. You'll be able to put links to CD Baby as well and all that. So that's how it sounds like when you read all the things you'll be able to do. And that could be a really cool thing. So as
one thing you left out, I think, was basically you can communicate with your fans. They can comment on, share, like things similar to Facebook.
Yeah. What it sounds like is there'll be a feed and you can post. Yeah, you are correct. I did leave that important piece out. Then it'll be a feed. And that fans, you can communicate there and use it as your social network and do updates and all that. And the idea that the conversation is happening on a music platform as opposed to on a Facebook platform or somewhere else. So if you're an artist, you want to go claim your profile. And we've got a big article about that on the DIY Musician blog. I'll put a link to it in the show notes and you can get started. They aren't, once you go through the process of claiming your profile, you have to wait for them to approve you, which I don't know anybody who's been approved yet because the service isn't live. So we're not sure how the actual approval process, the final pieces will happen, but we'll keep you posted on that.
So let me interject one thing too. I've noticed that some people have commented on that article saying, hey, it's not accepting my Apple ID. What's the deal? It's giving me this error warning. And then they'll come back an hour or two later and say, tried it again. It worked. So if you're having that problem, it might just be kind of like Apple's being flooded, or maybe they have a glitch or something, but wait a little bit, try it again.
You have a feeling they're being flooded and probably working out a lot of kinks to do this process. So yeah, if you get issues, and you brought up a good point, you have to have an Apple ID. This isn't, you don't, it's not, you can't just use, you know, if you've got a banned email address that's not attached to an Apple ID, then that won't work. It has to be an Apple ID. I would say it's similar to, the initial process is similar to how you claim your account at Pandora. Seems very similar, so yeah, you'll want to go do that. So we'll jump right into my why it won't be Ping 2.0. Because a lot of people are saying this is just, you know, they tried this with Ping, it didn't work. How's this going to be different? One, the biggest reason I think is this time around they realized what social networks really are in its social interactions, where when they launched Ping, things were limited. You couldn't do a lot of stuff. And they only let select artists do it at first, and it was a slow rollout, and nobody was there to talk to. So, and you couldn't put links to videos and anything like that. So I think they've learned from those mistakes. This is an app. So this is the music app on your iPhone. So if you have an iPhone, you already have the music button that's there. This is just going to be what happens when you click on that music button. Your iTunes library or your downloaded songs that are on your phone will be there, and then all the access to Apple Music stuff. So this is an app. It's on people's phones. The chances of them logging in and following artists is far greater than what they did with Ping. And you, the other thing is, it's you can share content and across social networks and link out. And I think they're realizing that if it's going to be successful, it has to allow for robust sharing and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's why it won't be Ping 2.0. And why it could be Ping 2.0 is, number one, artists have to use it. And if artists don't use it, music fans will lose interest in it real fast. And this is, I think, where artists are challenged, because most bigger major label artists that people are going to naturally be gravitated to go, oh, I'm going to go follow U2 or Coldplay or Rihanna or Lady Gaga. Some of those folks actually use social media, a lot of them because they have people that do it for them. Some of them never post anything. And if the bigger artists aren't engaging on this platform, I think it could be something that the fans as a whole don't find sticky enough. They don't find a reason to keep opening, because every time they open, nothing new has been posted. So artists have to use it. The second one is it has to be an experience that music fans want to engage in. If they don't engage in it, it's not going to matter what artist posts. If all my fans stay over at Facebook, I'm eventually going to abandon it and go back to Facebook. So, and the third reason I thought is, I was kind of comparing it to Instagram. I love Instagram. And you could say, well, that, you know, Instagram is all about photos, but the photos aren't all about photography or one topic, where I could see it, depending on how they execute this version, you know, this version of the social network on there, the Connect, Artist Connect, it might be that some of the conversations feel awkward aren't. The context is weird, and I don't know. That's one of those things that it could be that that it's not ideal for talking about broad topics, but if I'm talking about my latest release, it's the perfect place. So those are some of the reasons, things I think it could be great. Some things that depend on how they execute, it may not be great.
So on that last point, are you saying that basically because the focus of this social network is so narrowly focused on music, that users won't find as much value there because the discussion is too narrow?
Possibly. You know, it's the thing is, if I go on a social network, I'm not a big Facebook user, but when I go on Facebook, or Twitter's a better example. When I go on Twitter, I contribute some, I talk to other people some, and I read a lot of feeds. So if they make it where I can only follow feeds by artists and comment on them and share it out, but I can't interact with anybody outside of interacting within a band's post, it may not be as engaging to me as a user. So
that's true, because when you tweet, even if you're tweeting to someone, the tweet exists as something that represents your own online identity.
Yeah.
And that might be a little bit like sort of disembodied if it just exists on a band's Apple Music profile or something.
Yeah. So I think ultimately what it comes down to is if they create a very sticky user experience that's fun to use and bands use it and the fans are using it, it could be an amazing thing. But it takes both components.
And the good news for Apple, in my opinion, is it doesn't matter if it fails, because what's important is the streaming service, not Kinect, not the radio.
Well,
that's my feeling about it. Kinect could fail and...
We'll get to that in a second. First, because okay. I think I want to dispel a couple myths that have been flying around out there. And then you wrote an article about the impact of the industry. So I want to hear your take on the impact of the industry. But then I have a theory a reason to say that the Kinect piece might be one of the most important pieces.
I'm excited to be proven wrong.
But first, a couple quick myths. The iTunes Store is not going away. I repeat, the iTunes Store is not going away. Your music will still be available for purchase and for download. That is not going away. They make it very clear on their website, too. That was another thing I was very pleased to say. Apparently, it's getting a big overhaul, though, which is long overdue. That was like a brief, fleeting moment. They said that in the keynote, and it looks like it's getting a big overhaul that will look nice. So the iTunes Store is not going away. They call it the backbone of all their media, you know, TV, film, audiobooks, and all that kind of stuff that you buy, and the music service is a piece of that. Another myth is that you no longer need a distributor. You absolutely do need a distributor. They are not letting people sign up directly with them. As long as I've worked at CD Baby, I've never, ever heard the folks over at Apple give any sort of indication that they are ever interested in having artists, individual indie artists, sign up directly with them.
Because that would mean they would be inundated with customer service requests by hundreds of thousands of people that they want to take on,
yeah.
Basically.
They'd rather, they deal with catalogs. And so you still need a distributor. The content that you can engage with directly using Apple Kinect is not monetized. So if you upload, like Chris mentioned, a demo of, you know, like your album's out and you upload a couple, hey, here's how the song started. Here's the original version, the demo we made. That won't be monetized. That's basically free content you're letting people stream. And I'm not clear if people will be able to download that. So it doesn't replace a SoundCloud because it's going to have limitations, but so you have to have music distributed from a source an aggregator or a label that they work with. And then once that profile is created, you can go claim that profile and it gives you access to some privileges. Similar to how Pandora works. You go through a submission process with Pandora, they accept or reject you. And once you're on Pandora, then you can go back and claim that profile and get access to some features. The distribution process and the claiming of the account are two separate things, and the distribution process has to come first. So that's one thing that's important to note. Another rumor that's raging is that artists won't make money. What I can say is that, or I saw somebody say, I should just give up and just stream my music on Bandcamp. You don't get paid for streams on Bandcamp. That's one thing to be aware of. But there's some rumors raging and a lot of discussion about the trial period. And while the deal points of, you know, what CD Baby has with iTunes on these things, I'm not able to say specifically. I can say this. Whatever you think about, I can say that our deal is on par with all the other streaming services. And I can say that that as an artist, I think what is important, if streaming is going to work, and this will tie into the impact on the industry that Chris will discuss, if streaming is important, or if streaming is what the industry is moving to, it's important to get as many people doing it as possible in order for artists to make more money. So that's why I don't freak out about as a trial period. In fact, I'll talk about that in a second, where I think that's they may have found the sweet spot to make this all work. So I don't think artists should react and pull music. Again, iTunes Store is still there. Your fans can still buy your music. This is an additional streaming service. I still say you should have your music everywhere fans want to be. And there's going to be a rush of people checking this out. And it may be a way to grab onto some new fans. So,
did you want to dispel the 58% myth?
Yeah, that I can't speak to directly. That was some nice spin by the press that they were comparing Spotify to Apple and saying Apple was paying far less than Spotify, but they had conveniently removed the publishing portion of what, you know, Apple Music will be paying. So let's move on to the impact on the industry, because then we do have a thing where we say the four revenue streams Apple Music will generate for you.
Okay, so you want my theory?
Yeah, you had a theory on the blog.
Okay, so basically for months now, as this launch has been rumored, lots of people in the music industry have been like, big deal, another streaming service, or like, you know, why would I need Apple Music if I can just listen to music on Spotify for free? And, you know, lots of people with negative or indifferent views towards Apple Music. I've been really excited about it. And here's why. I feel like Apple is the one brand on the planet that can launch a subscription streaming service where you have to pay money to stream music. There's no free tier, and drive massive amounts of new customers to that service and change listeners' habits worldwide. So I think subscription streaming, as introduced by Apple, is now the present and future of the music industry, and downloads will be reduced to, you know, very small, if not going away. And I think that maybe the past 10 years have been like the download decade, which was just a bridge between the vinyl and CD era, which I think is important that still continues, because there's a role for owning the physical media. But anyways, I don't think it makes sense anymore to store a bunch of music on your hard drive. So the reason I'm excited about that, it's not just because it's some like technological woohoo thing where now we can like listen to music according to the technology that is available now. But the real reason is I think that since streaming is inevitable, Apple getting behind that and hopefully changing customer habits means that there'll be so many people paying to stream, which will drive up per stream payout rates. And once everyone's, so you'll make more money per stream potentially. And then also the other thing that could happen is that once everyone is streaming music and paying to do it, we can kind of like refocus the discussion in terms of fair payouts and artist remuneration and what publishers should be paid and all this stuff once everyone is using the same technology. Like if we can get all on that same page, then lobbying efforts and education and negotiating with the services and all that stuff, I think the argument will be a little bit clearer to everyone involved once we're all streaming.
Yeah, it definitely makes the economics case a lot easier if everyone's engaged in the same medium. I mean, right now it's so random that honestly, when it comes to writing laws and stuff, it becomes and just educating the public, educating politicians who are making these laws, it's a tough challenge to get everyone even in the same room talking about the same thing and knowing that they're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, you could even be talking about the same thing and talking about different things because coming at it from different angles. And
well, you hit on something, and this is what I was talking about with the 90-day trial period. You hit on something that I think is key to this whole thing and what has to happen. I think we've lived in a world of musical, I'll use the word glut. That has a negative connotation, but I will say a world of endless music in the digital world. And I think when we have that, it's like I can pick up my phone and I can get access to a lot of things. And so it's easy to assume that, hey, we've already reached the most engagement people are going to be with music. Now it's just a matter about making the economics work. And I think that is a very, very wrong assumption. I think we're just at the beginning of services that really get people engaged with music in ways that we haven't ever thought of before, or ways just making it easier. Right now, I mean, people have to do a lot of like file management, moving downloads from devices. If you're using a streaming service, they're not that sticky, I would say. Whenever I open Spotify, if I don't have an artist in mind, I honestly have a hard time finding something to listen to. And I end up just closing it and opening my iPhone and looking for something else that I already know I like. So I think there is so much work to be done to create a service that is so engaging to the user that, one, millions more people start paying for it, like millions. Their goal is like 100 million people. So that engagement level that, like you talked about, changing user habits. If you think about it, if a casual music listener or a casual music buyer, I should say, which somebody was saying most people fall into that category. There was an article I saw today. I don't remember the percentages, but I don't know where they got their facts anyway. So if there's a casual music buyer, and I would fall in that category, you buy like 1 to 5 albums a year. If you convert me from buying 1 to 5 albums a year to paying $10 a month, I'm already spending double what I was spending before. And I think if we can get, which probably most of the people are casual music listeners that are buying, you get them converting, they're already paying more. And then you create a service where more people want to get engaged with music. I think it can have a huge financial impact on the industry.
Yeah, and my excitement about Apple being the one to do it is, you know, Spotify is growing. They're offering a good product, but they are borrowing money to stay afloat, whereas Apple has, you know, like you said earlier, enough money to buy half the planet. So they can put all of that marketing muscle into attracting, you know, like I said in my blog post, like my aunt, you know, who probably is never going to get a Spotify account opened up, but when it comes preloaded on her iPhone, she might be like, oh, Apple Music. Oh, okay, cool. So then suddenly like the 100 million goal, 100 million paid subscribers that Apple sets doesn't seem unrealistic. And I think being even broader than that worldwide, you know, why not say that in 5 years we could have billions of paid subscribers across many services? Not like they'd all be an Apple, but like that's a lot of money coming in. And 70% of it is going to rights holders in you know, many of these cases. So I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned your aunt. My dad and mom are a perfect example as well. They would probably buy this product. They probably have never even downloaded Spotify. And it's built into the iOS. I think that's another key piece. So things like Siri, in the keynote they showed this, and this was one of the things that started making me go, okay, this is different than just a different version of Spotify. When things like talking to Siri and saying, Siri, what was the name of the song that was in tonight's NBC show? And it returning the song to play for you right there. Those kind of interactions, and those engagements, when I saw them and a lot of that technology where they were really focusing on, it's not about like the top 100. It's not about, it's really about driving more people deeper into the music and with technology in ways like that. I think that's pointed to, like, I see if you're getting people really engaged where they feel like not only is it the place they go to enjoy music, it's their musical search engine, it's their everything, that mm-hmm. that's a different story, and that can really get some mass adoption that drives a lot of revenue into the music product. So that's why, you know, when the conversation about this 90-day trial that they have, I think people get upset about. I think the 90 days are important because with you have 90 days to try it, then it ends. You have to get a different Apple ID to ever get a 90-day free trial again. But it's about creating user habits, and you're not going to create user habits in a week. And I think that's why Beats, I think Beats was 7 days. That's why I never signed up with Beats. If I look at them, I'm like, oh, there's Beats, and I'll sign up. But by the weekend, half of my trial's gone, and then I try it once on the weekend, and I haven't had a chance to really engage with it and make it a part of my life. And then with 90 days, that's a possibility. And at that point, I'm hooked. It's sticky. It's a part of what I'm doing. And
they've already got your credit card.
Got my credit card. They don't need anything. It's just going to roll right into it, and it's good. And I think with Spotify, when you've got the freemium model, you're always going to have to pay for the freeloaders. They're always going to weigh down the revenue possibilities for the folks that are paying. And so I think that's why Apple is onto something, and I wouldn't freak out about how much money is being made during the free trial period. I mean, when you look at it you're not really making money off of the freemium, the people getting Spotify for free.
Part of my maybe optimism about this service launching and my theory about how it will affect the industry also does make the assumption that the deals that Apple has made with labels and the way it's structured will eventually force Spotify to get rid of its freemium. And then everyone will have to pay, no matter whether they're using Rhapsody or Spotify or Apple or whoever. Like, subscription streaming is then the standard.
Yeah, and that seems like to be going that way. And the thing, like what you mentioned, is that once we get there, I think it's then we can just start having conversations about the direct economics of streaming, like we did with CDs. CDs were sold, made one way, they were sold one way. When everyone gets, if we're all consuming music in a similar way, you can get to the direct economics and changing them and really dissect that and figure out how to make it work better and better over time. Like somebody post today something about, you know, in the future, it'd be nice if I'm paying $10 a month, but all I listen to is Death Cab for Cutie, that Death Cab for Cutie would get all my money every month. And the money I'm spending on my subscription going directly to the tracks that I'm listening to. We're a ways off from that, but that's a future where when you think about, okay, if I've got 1,000 fans that are diehard fans that listen to my album, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times a year, 100 times a year, now that's something that's better than downloads, because now I'm making, instead of them paying $10 for an album and never paying me again, they're paying me all the time.
Yeah, and if they're a real, you know, diehard fan and that music means something to them, that can stretch over 20, 30, 40, 50 years. I mean, I don't know if streaming technology as it exists now will exist that long, but like it could potentially just, you know, keep charging little transactions every time you listen forever.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm excited to see how this launches and to see what they've done with it. I think how they've tried to incorporate technology will take it to a new level. And also, they just made a quick mention at the keynote, but they have started making operating systems for cars. So when this is all pre-wired to cars, your phone, your iPad, every device in your house, and then it can start reacting to what you're doing, or maybe there, you just have settings where your HomeKit sets I want chill lighting and chill music, and it just is always running in the background day and night, and streaming music and paying artists for using music, and they're using it more than they ever have. So stuff like that, you never know.
And so all of that, is that why you think Kinect might be the important a piece as the streaming?
I think the Kinect plays into like the technology and Kinect being that the idea is changing user habits and getting people engaged with it. I think with social networks, we tend to think we've gone as far as we can. But then someone finds a way to, or society, culture shifts a little bit and something else gets us to where we want to be.
You can send lewd pictures through a social network that destroys your image after 6 seconds. And
That revolutionized my life, Chris.
Yes. Innovation. It's innovation at work.
No, I have not partaken in sending lewd pictures of myself to people. I find that disturbing. You never know. So with this, I think it really comes down to with their reach, with it being built in, with technology being built in, if it's an engaging experience, millions and millions of more people will come and experience music that haven't before. And if anyone's going to do it, it's going to be Apple. If they fail miserably, then maybe it all just falls apart. But so I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see what happens. I know that tons of people are going to be re-engaged with music over the next 6 months to a year as they really market this thing. And it'll probably drive download sales too, because, you know, just because they're advertising their streaming service doesn't mean that the people that prefer to own music and have downloads aren't going to go and buy downloads. So,
and I would just want to say that for anyone that's thinking that I'm that either of us are just total Apple devotees, cult members of the cult, I'm not. I watched that 15-hour long presentation they gave the other day, and it was very amusing.
Yeah, that was like,
and frightening.
Now, when you wiggle your mouse, the cursor will get big and smaller so you can find it easier. Cheers. Practically
explodes.
A standing ovation. I'm like, all right, people, this is, I just started watching Silicon Valley.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Been binge watching that. And the thing is, speaking of how people engage with things and culture shifting, I'm almost sad that I started doing it now, because they've only done 2 seasons and they're only 8 episodes each. I'm like, I would have loved to have discovered this knowing that there was 100 episodes.
Yeah.
And I could just spend the rest of my summer being amused by this show. But yeah, that show's hilarious, that making fun of the whole Silicon Valley culture. But let's talk about you posted an article about the 4 kinds of royalties you can earn from Apple Music. Let's run through those real quick. And then we've got some listener feedback and we can get to.
Sure. Do you want me to start listing them?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so the first one, and maybe the most obvious, is an interactive streaming royalty. So that's money that Apple pays you or the owner of the sound recording. So it could be either you if you own your record, or your label for the stream anytime someone dials up your song. And then the next one is a mechanical royalty, which is a publishing royalty that's paid to publisher and songwriter. And basically, like, a lot of people think of mechanical royalties as making like a physical replication, a mechanical version, like a CD or a vinyl record. But it also applies to streams. It's a little more virtual in that realm. But anyways, you can get paid a mechanical royalty every time your song is streamed. In order to do that, you need a publishing administrator or a publisher who's getting that for you, such as CD Baby Pro. Plug. And then there's also, because Apple Music is focused on the radio bit, and they've got Beats One and iTunes Radio and stuff, there's performance royalties that you can collect for plays through those radio features, which you'd get through ASCAP or BMI or CSAC, whoever your performing rights organization is. And then the last one is, what do they call it again? It is the digital performance royalty. Which is basically anytime a song gets played on a online radio service, so, you know, Beats One or iTunes Radio, a small royalty is owed to the people who own the sound recording or who helped create the sound recording. So it gets paid to artists, session players on the song, and the label. Normally for online streaming, what do they call it, non-interactive streaming services, that money would get paid to Sound Exchange and you'd collect it through them. In the case of Apple Music, they're paying it directly to CD Baby, and so we'd pass it on to you.
Yeah, so there's four different royalty streams that you can tap into, and the mechanical one is you gets paid to a publishing administrator. If you're not with CD Baby Pro, this really should take you over the top to make sure you're collecting this, because if you're an artist in the U.S. and say it does shift to everything being about Apple Music and Spotify, because this is paid to, on your Spotify streams as well, this is money we can collect for you, and it's becoming increasingly important that you collect this money. If you're not signed up with ASCAP or BMI, you should do so. If you sign up with CD Baby Pro, we'll handle that for you. So yeah, it's a lot more, you know, those four revenue streams are all represented there, and you need to make sure that you tap into that. We'll put a link to that article as well, because it's important that you pay attention to that and don't miss out on some of the money your music is generating. So yeah, I think we might have we exhausted this topic.
Maybe let's return to it in 6 months and we'll see what the effect of it was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna have to listen back to this. Maybe we did sound like Apple fanboys. You and I have been talking about this all week long, so it's at this point I'm feeling a little burnt out on it. Not in a bad way, but just kind of like I've said so much, I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. So maybe I'm delirious.
Let me go on one more tirade here. So the thing I'm sick of talking about, stretching back years at this point, is the doomsday people who think that streaming is destroying music economies. A technology is not destroying, like, it's the inevitable technology. Like, why else would so many people be adopting it? It makes sense for the moment, right? So, like, stop. Basically, I'm saying stop complaining, hop on board the inevitable, and then let's get down to the work of making sure it's fair.
Yeah, I agree with your statement, and I liked how early you positioned it as getting everybody on board to be talking about the same thing so we can actually make that one thing be advantageous for all. So I think the artists, there's two pieces, and I know the tension is that there's the fans and then there's the creators, but in the middle we've had these tech companies get stuck there, and they seem to have their own interest in mind. But I think
and the internet providers as well, they benefit.
Yeah. But so I think that yes, it is inevitable, but in this case, I think it's not something that the tech companies are forcing on everybody. I think, like what you said, the fans have said this is how they want to engage with music. So we can either depart from that and only be interested in our true fans, which will probably buy a CD if that's all we sell, or downloads if that's all we sell, or whatever. But I think to reach the mass market, you gotta play where the music fans are saying they're gonna be, and I am most hopeful about what Apple is proposing than I have seen anywhere else. So I think it's a matter of get on board, go claim your artist account, start engaging on that platform early, because if you've got fans that are getting on Apple Music, it would be really lame if they get there and they look for you, and your artist page is empty and you're not engaging, especially during this period when lots of people are going to be interested in trying it out. When everyone's kicking the tires on something and potentially looking at it's your stuff, you don't want to feel like you're not at the party. I think that's a missed opportunity. So think about this as an opportunity to establish yourself on a new platform that could quite possibly become the music business for a lot of folks. So, and if you think we're wrong, that's fine. We could be wrong. You can always just send your fans to cdbaby.com. You can charge as much as you want for your music there. And I'm happy for you to do that too. It's free to sign up at just to put your music on cdbaby.com, and you make the most money that you'll make anywhere. So that's always an option too.
And the downloads are CD quality. So
yeah,
there you go.
And it may have sounded like I was being sarcastic when I said that, but I really wasn't. I'm serious.
I would disagree. I mean, I think of course I think you should send your fans to CD Baby first because it's what benefits you most. But I think people should still have their music available in these other giant services, because otherwise you're just shooting yourself in the foot.
Absolutely. And I want to make that point clear. Your diehard fans will go wherever you want them to go. So you direct them where it's most beneficial to you, and that should always be your first thing. And that's why I was saying, if you want to just send your fans to CD Baby, absolutely do that. If you want them to go to your Bandcamp page, do that. But withdrawing from the major markets where lots of people are going to, new customers coming in and engaging with music deeper than they might have ever have, or maybe since they were in high school or whatever, I think to not be present, it could be a missed opportunity for you that 2 years from now you might go, man, I wish I had not waited to get in. So that's all. We have some listener feedback and questions that have absolutely nothing to do with Apple Music because they submitted them before this announcement was made.
Okay, good. A breath of fresh air.
So let me pull this up here. So I should say, if you've got comments, feedback, thoughts about Apple Music, is it the end of the world? Is music over? Is it the best thing ever? Are you excited? Are you worried? You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can call our listener line at, oh, darn it, I forgot to I don't have this memorized for some reason. Say something funny real quick, Chris.
Knock, knock.
All right, I found it. Save your incredible joke for later. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. So again, email us podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or call our listener line at 360-524-2209. You can also hunt us down on Twitter if you like. Here is an email from Philip. He says, hey guys, really love the podcast, been listening for years and I've never written in. I have a question now though that I could really use your help with. My band, Whiskey and Rye, is starting to be offered slots at great clubs. The problem is that the bookers are not sending contracts with split info, and I don't know which shows to emphasize to our fan base. We've packed clubs before by ourselves and then got 20% of the split. I've asked bookers in a roundabout way what the split is, but they brush it aside and I'm feeling like I'm being a pain. Should I shut up and hope they take care of us when when we draw and play well? Or is there a way to approach a booker you don't know well who knows you should be thankful for the slot being offered no matter the pay and get split info? So basically he's saying they're getting offered better slots for the gigs. I sent him a follow-up email for some clarification about these gigs. So what his situation was is that they've been drawing well, they've been packing some clubs on their own, and so they've been getting asked to be a part of other bills that are higher profile at bigger clubs, and the club booker is not really divulging a lot of the information about what the split will be, and they're getting there and kind of being disappointed by what. How would you approach a club booker like that? You don't know the club that well. You don't want to burn any bridges and be.
Yeah. I'm not sure. And I was just going to say that, I mean, of all the gigs I've played, I can't remember a booker being evasive on a question like that. Like, you know, I've played played gigs where the terms are terrible, but I knew they were terrible. You know, like, you don't get paid. Do you want to play? Or, hey, we get drink tickets or whatever it is. Like, crappy terms are crappy terms, but at least I felt like I've been aware of those terms playing most gigs. So I think it would be important to know and then still have the power to say, okay, I'll play it or I won't. But I don't know how you'd get that information out of bookers if you've been trying to ask them and they're not.
Well, it sounds like he said, I asked him that follow-up question about, you know, tell me a little bit more about these shows. He's like, to answer your question about the types of venues, we play all kinds and tour nationally. Where I'm experiencing this issue is specifically with local mid-sized clubs, 300 to 700 capacity, where we are added to a bill already headlined by another band. Oddly enough, we always know the pay and get paid well for out-of-town gigs, often because we are headlining. I imagine because they know you're not going to jump in a band bus without terms on paper. And he says, the most common split I've seen with three bands locally is 20% to the venue and opening two acts and 40% to the headliner. So it sounds like it may be one where the headliner's already been solidified and they're just trying to find the last two people to round out the bill. It could be getting close to the show and the club booker feels less invested with, like, tying them down.
Sure. I mean, I guess I feel like he may have answered his own question, though, because when he says, like, there's an assumption that the band that's touring and is on the bus and headlining wouldn't show up unless the terms were favorable, like, why would that not apply to everyone else that's involved? Like, even if it's a show in your own hometown, like, you still have to reserve the night, practice, get your equipment together. There's still work involved, and I don't know, maybe the answer is to just say, like, look, we're not going to show up unless you tell us what the terms are.
Yeah, and it may depend on what city you're in and the music climate there. He didn't say.
Yeah, I mean, in L.A., I know a lot of this goes out the window.
Yeah.
But
by the way, I really liked your guys' website, Philip. I thought the Whiskey and Rye website was a cool website.
I don't feel like we're giving him very concrete advice here.
I don't know. Club bookers are an animal of their own. Maybe someone in our listening audience will have some good advice. I feel like he did mention that he kind of asks in a roundabout way. I think, you know, the common dilemma for an artist, at least I find myself in this dilemma, that we tend to be self-deprecating folk, at least a little, at least a bit of that in us. And assume that we're not worthy or that we should just shut up and take it. And if we raise a stink that someone will go, hey, never mind, there's 100 other people they're easier to work with than you. I think you do need to be easy to work with, but I don't think there's a problem with being direct. And if you're getting that many gigs, I think if you lose one because you were direct, well, next time, you know, maybe they'll treat you better just out of the gate. But I think trying to be clear and direct in a polite, professional way is the best way to go and say, hey, you know, I got to have these terms down. And it can be frustrating with a club booker who just doesn't respond. I know they get inundated with a lot of email, but I think sometimes club bookers can be irresponsible with not giving details to folks who actually are supposed to be there. And there's a lot of details, a lot of shows, a lot of moving parts. I'm sure it gets frustrating on their end. If you don't know what you're getting into, it's tough to show up and put on a good show. That was my attempt at a good answer.
No, I agree. I like what you said too about, like, if they're getting plenty of bookings, then don't worry about burning one bridge with someone who's being unprofessional anyways, because, like, big deal, you don't play that club again. Like, do you really want to, if by the time you get to headlining status, you still have to deal with the same unprofessional person? So,
yeah. Yep. So I hope that helps, Philip. If anyone in the audience has some suggestions for Philip, feel free to weigh in on the comment section. His band's Whiskey and Rye. And you can also email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or call our listener line, which we have a call from Kay from Indiana that we're going to play right now.
Hi, this is Kay from Indiana. I'm an independent artist, and my question is copyright and getting into that, trying to do this on my own and didn't know if you guys had any thoughts or procedures on making sure I'm doing that correctly to make sure all my songs written and performed are copyrighted. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Kay. This is actually a timely call because one of my bands, Hello Morning, we have a couple albums with a licensing company, and they just sent us an email saying that they are no longer going to work with any artist that, or represent any music unless they have the copyright information on file and the PRO information on file, which I've had, you know, to give PRO information to licensing companies before, but I'd never had this come up where they weren't going to represent you if your music wasn't officially registered for copyright. So I've been doing a little, I had never done that. I just never bothered to pay the money to have it officially registered. So now I'm having to. And so basically you just want to go over to copyright.gov. There's some links. It talks about registering a work. You want to select, if you have an album, you can select that and start the process. Their website is a little odd, I have to say. I was just on it last night. And so it'll help you file there, and then you will get, you know, information that's officially registered. So it's probably a wise thing to do. I've never done it just because I'm not thought, am I really going to get ripped off? But I was talking to someone here at CD Baby. His name's Joel Andrew. He's been here as long as Chris and I have. And over the years, he only works here part-time, but because he's been going to law school. And now he's sort of working as our some sort of kind of in-house, doing some in-house legal stuff for us. But I was talking to him about it, and he's like, you should. And there was this case he referenced that it was an independent artist where somebody ripped him off in a way that inhibited, it had something to do with like a placement or something. So anyway, he scared me enough. I'm like, okay. Because if you don't register, your music's copywritten, but if you don't register, you don't have the full arm of the law on your behalf. And it comes down to proving damages and how you get compensated for damages. It's harder if you're not registered. So
yeah, and I was going to say there's two different ways you can register sound recordings. There's like one form where you can kind of just do the album or buy the song. But then one way, I forget exactly what form it is, but you can just register like your whole catalog as a single like giant album of songs. I don't know what the downside to that is, but basically you save money, you register one time, and you're getting all your songs.
Yeah,
taken care of with one submission.
Yeah, and that's what I didn't finish the process, and that's what I was hoping that I could actually lump all the songs in as a compilation. I don't know if they've changed it now in the digital era. I will report back. It used to be that you could send in a CD, or you could do an individual song. I'm hoping you can just list a body of work, but I'll report back. But start at copyright.gov. And that'll get you your music copywritten. And I'm kind of curious if lots of people have been copywriting their music or registering, I should say. The second you create your music, it is officially your copyright. So that's the important distinction, is the next step is registering it. So if you have a government stamp that this is yours, and it gives you more protection under the law. So if you have anything you want to weigh in on, Apple Music, copyright, helping Philip and his band figure out how to, giving them some advice, you can email us podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or call our listener line at 360-524-2209. And of course, you can weigh in at the show notes at cdbabypodcast.com. Chris, this might quite possibly be our longest episode ever.
Sorry, everyone.
You know, one of the podcasts I listen to, they go on for sometimes 3 hours, and I listen to all of it.
Wow. While you're checking out ESPN's Twitter feed at work.
Yeah. Shortly after I clock in, I dial up ESPN's Twitter feed, and then
put on your three-hour podcast.
Yeah. No, I just listen in the car and keep listening until it's done, and then, you know. So... So we that may be what people do, or we it just might be you and I here, and some.
Or maybe there's going to be a big demand for this being the new format where we just keep talking.
Yeah, we never end. It's all right. Well, I'm really looking forward to feedback on this Apple Music episode, and see how the launch goes, and see what artists are thinking as we head towards that, and what could quite possibly be a very, very permanent shift in the industry, and we'll all have each other, no matter what happens. So, looking forward to it, and keep following us on Twitter at CD Baby, or I'm at K Bruner. Chris is at Chris Robley. We'll be talking about it. We've been doing some DIY musician Twitter chats as well, and these things are all fair game for that. So if you want opinions, we may listen back to this episode and think we were all wrong. So and want to change our position on everything. So so you will find us talking on Twitter and other places. So that is going to do it.
All right. Peace.
All right. We'll catch you guys later. Bye.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.